Thank you very much, Paula, and good afternoon, everyone. Well, again, it's a pleasure for Perth Airport to be the major sponsor of this event, and always a delight to be working with Paula and her great team, not only great advocates for Perth and WA, but through the CEDA network nationally. An honour also to be on this stage with such a distinguished panel. Thank you for joining us all today, panel members. And on behalf of the panel, I'd like to acknowledge the Whadjuk people of the Noongar Nation and pay my respects to their elders, past, present, and emerging, and pay respect, obviously, to the oldest living culture on this planet. Okay. We're obviously looking forward to questions from yourselves, so please be getting those ready if you haven't already got those in mind. I'll be coming back to you soon. In the meantime, I'm just going to ask the panel a few questions while we are warming up, so please look out for those roving mics and put your hand up to attract the team to come and garner your questions. Okay, let me start off. I think it's fair to say, and we've touched on it briefly already, there is kind of one key item dominating the media at the moment, and it has been suggested by some that it's more of an infodemic rather than a pandemic. But on that front, maybe, well, I should start off by saying our relationship with China is very important, not just for our economy, but certainly for our business as well. And it's very much, as far as Perth Airport's concerned, very much built on friendships and relationships, which are extremely important. And I really don't want to get caught up too much in the economies of everything associated with coronavirus. My personal feel is that we look after the people side of the equation at this time, the economy or the economic aspects will sort themselves out. But maybe if I start with or before I start, I should first of all say, Madam Dong Chu Kwa, that our relationship has strengthened in the last few weeks just in terms of working together with your team and doing everything we can. And we, I'm sure I share again on the panel, our thoughts are not just with the Chinese community locally, but with the people of China, and especially our sympathies for those who have lost their loved ones during this situation. So please pass on our sympathies. Maybe I'll start, Madam Dong Chu Kwa, from yourself, and really maybe just ask you briefly to share with us the Chinese government's response to the coronavirus.
Thank you very much, Kevin. Good afternoon, everyone. So I must first emphasize that I might be the few non-native speakers, English speakers, so you should kind of endure my English. But I think we have a lot of figures, and I will just give a very brief kind of overview of the latest situation. So by midnight, 24th, that is, I think, last night, the 24 p.m., the latest figure is like 70,000 infections in total, that is confirmed cases, and around 23,000 that have been cured. And the overall situation is heading towards a positive direction, with the positive momentum being consolidated, which I am very glad to report. So to put it more concretely, that is, out of the 24 out of the 31 provinces or big municipalities, 24 of them reported zero new increase of confirmed cases. So outside of the epicenter of Wuhan and the capital of Hubei, now we are seeing the whole country, actually the situation is definitely heading towards a better direction. And every day, the cured cases absolutely outnumber those newly confirmed cases. So that is very good news. But on the other hand, we cannot afford to relax, and we remain on very high alert. Also on Sunday, actually, Chinese President Xi Jinping convened unprecedented. This is first time, I think, in the whole world, in the human history, that the country hosts a nationwide teleconference with the participation of 170,000 officials from the top leadership chaired by President Xi Jinping, with the from top leadership of the members of the Political Bureau of the Central Committee of the Chinese Communist Party, to the grassroots levels at the county level officials and also military officials at the level. So the whole country through a video conference actually was listening to the latest updates and also the guidelines that was given by the government. And the overall kind of conclusion of this conference, actually President Xi made it very clear that we will not lightly announce it a victory until we have a complete win. So he said that the situation is still grim and complex, and it is still at a very critical stage for us in this battle. So that is generally the overall situation now. And the thing that I would like to add is also that according to traditional Chinese wisdom, all the previous this kind of epidemic usually they happen in winter time, and they gradually kind of fade out when the weather gets warmer. So this conference also was concentrating on two fronts. One front is the epidemic control and prevention. And on that front, about 8 measures was announced. And the most important one, make it short, is the protection of Wuhan, the protection of Hubei, because that is still the largest number of infected cases are still concentrated in Wuhan province alone. And secondly, the conference also emphasized the priority of keeping the capital, the national capital, Beijing, safe from newly increased cases. And there are a number of other measures, for example, taking good care of the medical workers who are fighting at the front line, and I can report that by far over 40,000 medical workers across the country is now at the front line in Wuhan, in Hubei province. So the medical workers of the whole country, with 2,000 of them now infected by this disease. So their sacrifice and dedication really touched the whole population. The Chinese people are now fully mobilized and united in this people's war, we say, to combat this disease. And the second front the conference concentrates on, and we are now putting more emphasis, actually is something that you may be more concerned about, that is the resumption of work and production, which will have a lot of spillover effects to outside world. And they actually covered a lot of aspects. They have designed a tailored kind of strategy for different provinces to resume their production and work. For those with lower risks, they can accelerate the speed. And for those who have higher risk, the priority is still the prevention of the disease. So that's so far generally the situation. And we have given delivered specific measures in terms of job market, stabilizing the job, the employment rate, and also because spring is coming in China, it is the season for agriculture production, and also a lot of measures was announced, and in the area of stabilizing the trade and foreign trade and investment. We also are keenly aware of China's role in international industrial chain, and we are trying our best through export tax rebates and other measures to guarantee that the trade section also stabilize. So you can see in Chinese news coverage that many provinces, and they are taking a lot of innovative measures to try to make sure, well, we minimize the risk, we try to resume the work as much as possible. And this year is highly significant because 2020 is the year of China's first centenary goal, that is the total elimination of in the Chinese history. We are going to achieve it by the end of this year. So it is a daunting task for us. And we are trying very hard. We have that in mind, in kind of making sure that our economic and social development goals will be met.
Thank you, Madam Dong. That's very comprehensive update on what's happening. Very much appreciate all that work, and again our thoughts with the people in the Chinese community and in China at this difficult time. Governor, perhaps if I turn to yourself, how have you seen the global response to the coronavirus, and perhaps what would be your message to the people of Western Australia and China at this time?
Well, I think the several things need to be said about the virus. The first is it is not as lethal as SARS. It is not as lethal as MERS. It is probably not as lethal as the 1919 epidemic, and it may not be as lethal as last year's flu. So those are the things that you, that's the first lot you have to note about it. And the second is that China has an enormous capacity for internal management and a very disciplined society. But the virus is now out. It's not simply in China, and it's out into countries which are far less competently managed or far less centrally managed. And it's out into Iran. It's into some parts of Europe. It's to here. It's into the US. And the question will arise, what happens now? And really, I couldn't say. So we're going to... It seems that China has it under control in China. The question, the lockdown has been so complete, the question has to be asked, when the lockdown measures are taken out, is that going to see a spread very rapidly, or is it going to go along with the capacities that are already, that are there to keep things disciplined? So from our point of view in Australia, we want China for human reasons, but also for our economic self-interest. This is not doing us any good at all.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for that, Governor. Again, hopefully there's some questions coming up soon. I'm coming back to the audience in a couple of minutes. And I'll come back to you in a second, Governor, probably going to get in trouble for asking politically associated questions, but as a former ambassador to the US, I'll be looking for your views just in terms of where the election's heading. But perhaps if I start that question with yourself, David,
you.
We think 33 days is a long time in terms of elections. You know, the Democratic primaries at the moment drawn out to November, so still quite a bit of time to run. But how do you see this playing out for Australia and more importantly, so Western Australia?
Okay, thank you, Kevin. First off, I'd like to express my deepest sympathies to the people of Wuhan and the people of China as well as they face this this awful virus. And certainly, I think, you know, at these times in particular is when governments and communities really think about top priorities. So getting back to your question, Kevin, in my first day or week as an American diplomat, the first lesson we learned was never to predict the future. And if so, never to get out and press on it. So I will say two things about our upcoming elections. And maybe we got the weeks wrong or the days wrong. Instead of 33 days, we do 33 weeks, or actually it's more like 33 months. Two things. I grew up in the Washington, D.C. area. You know, every 4 years, we would go to the inauguration of a new president coming in. And as a young kid, I didn't think much about it. You know, it was usually a freezing cold day in January, and you'd have to get in the car and go down and see what was happening. And I didn't really think about it until my first job out of uni, when I taught math and Macbeth in Malawi, in South Central Africa, for the Peace Corps, and lived in a one-party democracy with one of the longest reigning presidents, His Excellency the Life President, Hastings Kamuzu Banda. And you really do then appreciate the value of your democracy. And I think certainly what we're seeing in the United States right now is our democracy at work, and how we've structured it, and how complicated it is. But when I got back to the United States in 1993 and went down to the mall, I had a very deep appreciation for an inauguration where you had a sitting president actually vacating his seat to the incoming president. So certainly as a diplomat and living in, you know, Asia and Africa and Middle East and Europe as well, that point certainly is driven home. And I certainly encourage all Australians to, you know, expand yourself and expand your experiences, and certainly for young Australians. Certainly, I encourage them to go and visit and study and work in the United States, but to do that elsewhere. I think it really gives you a better appreciation of what you have and what wonders you have, not just in physical beauty, but in terms of the society that's been created in Australia. Second thing is that over the past 15 years or so, I've had the privilege of working on the Australia relationship on and off for three times. And I have utmost confidence in this relationship, both diplomatically as well as economically. You know, we are our biggest investors. The United States is the biggest investor in Australia, and the United States is the biggest destination for Australian investment. And I don't see any election changing that in any sort of way. So I'm very confident in this relationship and long-term consistency of this relationship. And lastly, I'd like to congratulate you, Kevin, and the Perth Airport on being awarded the best airport in Australia for the third straight year.
Thank you very much. That's down to the team. Great team effort. Thank you. Thank you very much, David.
Sure.
Governor, back to yourself. You've got some insight into the US. What would you like to add to that in terms of the opportunities for Australia and WA?
Well, can I just sort of say absolutely firstly, who the Americans elect as president is their business, not ours. And who we elect as prime minister is our business, not theirs. And that's always important to remember that. And that basically, on everything that you assess is important in the relationship, be it investment, be it military, be it intelligence or whatever, your job, if you happen to be in official positions in Australia, is to join the other worker bees, making sure underneath that no matter what is happening on the surface, the relationship is sustained and effective. And I think by and large, we do that pretty well. Second thing I'd say is that if Sanders is the Democrat candidate, Trump will win. That the Democrats were always very genteel, the ones that I used to come across, and they don't stick the boot in. I mean, if I was Bloomberg after the performance the other day, I'd be just putting out an ad saying, "Here's a picture of Sanders on his honeymoon in the Soviet Union, half naked." That's one of the ones they'll be using. Two, here is Sanders saying he endorses the Ayatollah's regime in Iran. You get that clip. Number three, here is Sanders saying he loves Castro. And number four, here is Sanders avoiding almost all of the child payments he is supposed to make. So, and finally, here is Sanders who didn't vote for 40 years. So if I was Bloomberg, that's what I would be running all week. But the Democrats have no courage, so they won't do. But don't worry. The moment Sanders is endorsed, you'll see all of that coming out, and I think Sanders would be lucky to win a dozen states.
Sounds like there's perhaps a role for you, Governor, after this.
So I think
campaign management, perhaps.
No, I think the role for me and for others who've been in official positions in Australia is how do you keep the show on the road even if some of your people are disturbed by what they see as emerging on the other side, and that's a challenge. Sanders might not be the candidate. If he is not the candidate and Warren is not the candidate, then I think it's likely Trump will be defeated.
Okay.
But that's just a distant observance.
Okay.
Kevin, one thing.
Thank you for sharing that honest opinion, Governor. David?
One thing I would just add, not to contradict anything the Governor said, is that if you happen to... If you happen to be an American or dual national, we at the consulate are really, really delighted to help you vote and help you exercise that right to vote.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's part of our role.
Thank you for that. Pass to yourself, Kirsty. There's a few things been happening in the UK recently. A few people may have heard of Brexit. And I think you've been through a bit of an election, but... Where do you see all that heading? Where again is the opportunity for Western Australia in amongst all that, from your perspective?
Luckily, the election period in the UK is slightly shorter than in the US. So that's a bonus. And yeah, also great that the outcome of the election and subsequently leaving the EU has given the UK a lot of much-needed certainty around all of that. And Brexit can create huge opportunities for Western Australia in particular. because the UK can now really develop and build on its strong links, you know, with Australia culturally, historically. Obviously, a huge part of that is negotiating the free trade agreement, and you know, the UK has been very publicly, you know, saying that Australia will be one of the first four negotiated, which is great, you know, after the US and the EU. And, you know, another sign kind of reinforcing that was the fact that we had the Foreign Secretary here on the East Coast a few weeks ago in his first international trip post-Brexit. So, you know, that was really solidifying, you know, the importance that the UK places on Australia at the moment and the relationship there. You know, they're moving swiftly. You may have seen that we recently announced a points-based immigration system, adopting the Australian system there, which will, you know, really encourage a lot more, you know, skilled migration between the two countries. Australians can already use the e-gates at the airports, which makes life much easier flying in for, you know, anyone visiting over there. And, you know, as the FTA negotiations progress, and, you know, we hope to see things like, you know, the mutual recognition of qualifications and that kind of thing to, you know, really encourage the transfer of talent between the two countries. And, you know, picking up on the points that were made this morning about, you know, the talent here and, you know, encouraging more talent to come over here. You know, and while the free trade agreements are only just starting, you know, the negotiations around that are only just starting, there's already a number of initiatives, agreements between UK and Australia that will really benefit Western Australia. So one example of that is the Space Bridge, that will, you know, allow the space sectors between Australia and the UK to be, you know, really enhanced and develop to their full potential. And that's a huge sector where I think, you know, WA in particular has such a huge opportunity, you know, especially around all the skills in remote ops and automation that's been developed out of, you know, the obviously global expertise that WA has in mining. That initiative is building on the success of the FinTech Bridge, which was agreed a few years ago, and that's already been hugely successful with more than 60 companies using that to do business between the two countries. So that's great. Another example is the wine mutual recognition agreement, which is obviously, you know, West Australian wine is fantastic, and, you know, I'm glad that's, you know, being able to be promoted more. So I think there's, you know, a huge number of opportunities around, you know, for both Australia and Western Australia and the UK coming out of all of this.
Fantastic. So we just need to get on with it then.
We do, exactly.
Okay, well, I'm sure there's plenty of people in the room looking to grasp those opportunities. Okay, it's your turn, audience, to now give the panel a workout. Where's the tough questions coming from in the room? Who's going first? There's got to be a burning question in somebody's mind.
Sort of strikes you as more in sorrow and pity than in anger.
Do we have a question? If not, I'm just going to keep going. Okay, I've got another question panel. One of the key projects we're working on with the Committee of Perth is really understanding how can we make Perth more of a global city and a global destination for investment, for trade, for tourism. I'd like to hear each of the panel's view on how do you think the world sees Perth and Western Australia, and what is it you think we need to do better to actually promote this great destination? As a proud advocate for this great state, Governor, I'll perhaps start with yourself on that one.
I think this, compared to what it was when I was a kid, you know, there were about 500,000 people in the town when I was 15 years old. There's four times that number now. Then we were essentially a derivative city. You know, we had the branch man, Dunlop or somebody else. They were the people who were the elite living in Netherlands, Dow, Keith and whatever. Now this is a complex economy and an extremely wealthy state. Even though we've been a bit in the economic doldrums, it's the economic doldrums at a very high point. I think if you want to do better on tourism, and we're starting to do really well, and you're talking about Perth per se, you have to focus on a sort of cultural centre. That you've got certainly the second best, maybe the best orchestra in Australia, in Wassa. You've got good opera, you've got good good dance. You've got a lot of cultural institutions which have, you know, globally comparable, in which people move in and out of global companies. You've got an area around Yagan Square now where you could do something like shift Whopper, which is now in the top 25 global training establishments of actors and stage and theatre personalities, and shift it towards the centre. You have to build up the centre of Perth, both for accommodation purposes and for and for cultural purposes. And with a world-class museum opening next year or late this year, that means that if you come into this town, you have something that on your guide maps will say you really need to see, apart from whatever Bledisloe Cup or anything else that's bringing you here presents. Once you are into the heart of the cultural zone, then you can spread out into the other parts of it. That's just an idea.
Okay, thank you for that, Governor. David, your view, fresh view?
Certainly, you know, I think that WA and Perth in particular is, you know, known as a mature economic market. It's known, as, of course, as a resources market. I've even heard some people say that Houston is the Perth of North America. Mm. But for me, I think, you know, and I'm not an economist by trade, I've got sort of 2 points that I like to make. One is, where is Perth in 2050, and where is WA in 2050? Where are, and I think the panelists on the last panel were looking at, especially the key issue of diversification. Australia and WA is a trading nation and state. What will they be trading in 2050? For us and for my 6 months that I've been here in Perth, I've been certainly impressed by the innovation sectors, often driven by the resources industry as well. The remote operations, the automation. You know, we have NASA has loaned a Robonaut at Woodside to look at future opportunities. And so I think that that's one first question is, where does the WA expect to be and want to be in 2050? And then the second point would be, you know, which partners can help you get there? And certainly for us in the United States, we think that there is, of course, a natural alignment and a natural fit. I mean, we have similar cultures, we have a shared history. It's just really easy, I think, both when you're traveling or if you're visiting or if you're doing business, both in the United States or in Australia, it all makes sense. Yes, I mean, there's some sort of, you know, different ways the regulations are structured, but it's all intelligible. The sort of core principles are there. Just as, you know, as an aside, I was at a Perth Festival concert on Sunday night. An American artist named Wiseblood was performing, and it was her first trip to Perth. And she was up on stage, and the first thing she said was, "I've been here in Perth for, I don't know, 12 hours or so, and it feels just like LA. I love it." Hmm. It is so great.
It sounds like a very wise individual.
It does.
Thank you. I'm very conscious of time. I've got two minutes left. Kirsty, very briefly, what would be your last thoughts on Perth, Western Australia?
Well, there's so many opportunities here, and, you know, as you're saying, the innovation coming out of here is incredible. Obviously, the market here is a lot smaller than, you know, markets, you know, internationally. And so I think, you know, where companies can, you know, start here and then go global, there's so many, you know, you can see companies that have done that so well, and the same with companies coming in here as well. You know, BAE Systems coming over, TransferWise has just invested in Australia with £250 million, you know, companies expanding out. So, you know, Constable and I were talking about Avarian Insurance Company, that InsurTech, that started in Perth, and they've now expanded into the UK, and they're writing California earthquake insurance on Lloyd's of London paper with technology developed in Perth. And I think that's such a great example of, you know, a company that can be completely global from here. And,
fantastic.
You know, the direct flight, obviously, as you know, it's been, I think.
That's a great.
Shared business hours. There's so many great things. And with 10% of the population being in WA, being literally born in the UK, we've already got those links. I think just building on that and, you know, taking advantage of that.
That's some great examples. Thank you. Madam Dong, last word. Your thoughts from?
I think from a Chinese perspective or Asian perspective, I have noticed that in the CEDA report, actually you mentioned that there is a sign of showing that maybe the number of Chinese tourists going to Australia as a whole is plateauing. But I think in terms of Western Australia, we still have great potential because both in terms of percentage of international students and tourists, WA still accounts for a very small percentage or national. And Perth actually is not that well known in China, and the reason there might be many reasons. And when I search Perth before I came here, it is most labeled as the remote city or the most isolated city in the world, which I do not agree when I come here. And I think for many Chinese, there are a lot of tourist attractions that may be of interest to them, that is, may not be the similar, or many Westerners may not understand why it is like that. So, for example, the Pink Lake, I think that's a good, a huge attraction. But the first, at the first place, you have to get people know about Perth. So that is something that I think we all have to work. And I wish to take this opportunity before. I'm not sure I have another chance to talk, to express WA and yourself and the state government, WA people, for your compassion and solidarity with the Chinese people during this very difficult time. And I have collected so many short videos expressing support, and I have published it in the Chinese social media as well as Twitter and Facebook. And the state media located at the eastern coast, they compiled it for us. And they made it a very beautiful video with a brief introduction about Western Australia. And it's widely circulated in the Chinese social media. And I think in itself, it actually is an advertisement. And that's a demonstration of how you can make the best of it out of a crisis.
Oh,
maybe WA will have more visibility out of this. And it presents a human face, especially given the sudden announcement of this entry ban of the federal government, a lot of students being stranded back in China. But this conveyed the message of the Australian people, which I think is very good. So I think in general, WA is a very exotic and friendly land, and I'm very much part of this in kind of getting China Eastern Airlines direct flight from Shanghai to Perth. But I think we need to work hard and start early because once this coronavirus thing is over, there will be a period a transitional period for recovery, and many airlines, as I am told, Chinese airlines, they may reconsider in general their global strategy because some of the airlines are losing money for so long. They may even consider, even though all the direct flights are canceled now, whether they will resume. That's a question mark. And
I certainly hope so. I'm wrong.
That has already been postponed until June.
Yeah.
And after that, what would be the long-term effect?
I'm sure that this will rebound very quickly, and your great support and those kind words are very much appreciated. Thank you, Madam Dong.
Yeah.
I feel I'm probably over time, so I better wrap up. Please join me, ladies and gentlemen, in thanking the Governor, Madam Dong, Kirsty and David.